Welcome to Oak City Church, a family of learners, lovers, and givers sent. For more information, visit us online at oakcitychurch.com. Let us know if we can help you in any way. Thank you for listening.
Amen. Thanks, Jeff. Although this is probably the riskiest thing you've ever done in your pastoral life, is putting me up here on the stage. So we'll see how it goes, but... Once again, I'm Alan. I'm an elder here at Oak City Church, and I'm also a co-founder of Sunika, who's one of our partner ministries here at Oak City. And about 2016, we were heading into the biggest fundraiser of our history. It was our second big Turn on the Water campaign. We were going to raise a bunch of money to do a water project in a community called San Carlos, and I was scared out of my mind because I knew we were going to need a pretty good chunk of change to get this done. And we were wrestling back and forth as an organization. Are we going to raise $84,000 or are we going to raise $100,000? Because I could see a lot of ways where maybe we could get it done at 84, but we'd probably need 100. And I was scared to go for the 100 number because it was so far beyond anything we'd ever done. But at the end of the day, we said, okay, we're going to go to 84. I kind of wussed out. I wanted to have a big win. And the night of the thing comes. Actually, before I go there, I was in Nicaragua leading up to this, and I remember being completely scared. And Betty Pease, who is my co-founder Josh Pease's wife, catches me at the dinner table looking worried, staring off into la-la land. And she looks at me and she says, "Alan, ánimo." And I was like, what does that mean? And ánimo is kind of a Spanish way of saying be encouraged. And they prayed for me, and... how about that? That seems too loud. Okay. So yeah, they prayed for me, and you know, we came back to the States. We had our fundraiser, and not only did we hit our 84, and not only did we hit our $100,000 mark, but we landed the night on $116,000. And you can, if you're not really good with math, you can see how these numbers work. And this was just God playing games with me, because that $16,000 gap that I'd shorted him on, he just doubled it up, and we landed on $116,000. And you know, you'd think I would be riding high for a long time after that night. But man, no sooner than 2 minutes had passed after walking out of that room that night, I started hearing voices in my head. "Alan, you're a failure. This is not going to work. The project's never going to come to fruition." And I was depressed for days, and I could not understand why that was. But as we go into this sermon, I think we're going to see that played out in someone else's life. And maybe there's something to it. But I'm going to go ahead and give you guys the whole point of the sermon right now. And that's that if you follow Jesus, and especially if you follow Jesus, you're going to reach the end of yourself. And you're going to crack. But be encouraged, because the Lord is gracious and he's tender. And he will nurse you back to good. And just before you think you're ready, he's going to give you a little nudge and send you out on your next mission. So, as we get into the scripture this morning, I'm going to ask for the help of an assistant, my buddy Gabe, one of our youth group guys. You're going to come on up here. We're going to do a dramatic reading, you guys. Why don't you stand down here, actually? Because you're going to play the part of Elijah, and I'm going to be King Ahab, okay? So this is your staff, Elijah. A lot of these old prophet guys, they carried staffs around. And just so you guys know, I'm making Gabe do this because I was his youth group leader, and he was a rascal for a couple of years. So this is what you get, Gabe. So here we are with 1 Kings 17:1. And by the way, this is Elijah's first show in the entire Bible. We jump right in hot here. 17:1, it says, "Now Elijah the Tishbite of Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, 'Bam!' There you go, Gabe. Way to go, Gabe. He was so mad at me. But I wanted to start out like that because you really need to get the fact that this was a dramatic thing that Elijah was doing. He's standing in front of the king's court, and he's telling the king, "No more rain, no dew, until I say so." And of course, he really means until God tells me to tell you so. And then... as soon as this happens, God tells him, "All right, get out of town. You better run." because Ahab was going to want to kill him. Not only Ahab, but his sinister and evil wife Jezebel were going to kill him. So he gets out of town, and he heads to a little brook called Cherith. So he's out in the forest, and God sends ravens to feed him. Crazy thing. And so he's out there for a good long while. And just to give you a little more backstory on why this is happening. So Jezebel and King Ahab had been really promoting a more pluralistic or even polytheistic society in Israel. They'd been bringing these gods called Baals to worship. And so this was God's way of getting Israel and getting the king's attention, this drought here. Okay, so here he is out there in the wilderness. The brook dries up, and he's got no more water. And God's like, all right, I want you to go to a new place called Zarephath. Okay? So as we see Elijah setting up his life here in Zarephath, we're going to see a lot of different things, okay? But I want you guys to realize that this is an incredible man. I mean, he has got a line to God like nobody else. But he's also human. And we're going to see his passions. We're going to see his weaknesses. We're going to see him do some silly things. And so I want you to realize that even if you think you're weird, or you think you're shy, you don't have a lot to offer, if you don't think you're talented, the Lord can use you. I'm going to try to draw that out today. So here we are in Zarephath. And you could easily skip over this little town, right? But it reminds me actually of an Indiana Jones movie. So this was, I believe, the Last Crusade, right? And Indiana Jones, his dad, Indiana Jones Sr., right, says, we got to go back to Berlin to get the Grail Diary. Remember that scene? And Indiana Jones is like, back to Berlin? To the lion's den? And yeah, it was just as cheesy in the movie as it was when I just said it right then, which is the way those movies are. But Zarephath was kind of like that place, back to Berlin, because this is where the whole Baal worship thing got started, right there in Zarephath. Not only that, but Jezebel is from Zarephath, right? So for some reason, God calls him to this place, which is dangerous, and it's certainly crawling with Jezebel and Ahab's assassins. But he tells him to go there and find this widow. And so right as Elijah rolls into town, he finds this widow, and he asks her for some water. And before she can even get him the water, then he asks for some bread. And so we're going to pick up in 17:12. And she says to him, as the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I'm gathering a couple of sticks that I may go and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. And Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go and do as you have said, but first make me a little cake of it. And we're going to find out later that Elijah loves him some cake. He says, bring it to me, and afterward make something for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty until the day the Lord sends rain upon the earth. And so she does this, and it works. The oil is not spent. The water does not run out. And so he's out there for like 3 years. We don't know what the breakup is between the little brook and between the widow's house, but he's at the two places for 3 whole years. And while he's there, something else crazy happens. The widow's son actually dies. And she comes to Elijah, and she's mad at him. She's like, so I guess you just came here to expose my sin, and now my son's dead. And so she kind of blames it on him. And so Elijah kind of takes this one to the chest, and he goes up to the upper room where the kid's at, and he does this crazy thing where he lays himself down once, twice, three times, on top of the boy, and the boy comes back to life. I mean, this is crazy. This is who Elijah is. This is the kind of stuff that God does through him. And in 1 Kings 17:24, the widow says to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God, and the word of the Lord and your mouth is truth. And so, guys, I don't think we or most humans are ever going to have this kind of connection to God's power. But we're going to see Elijah take a turn here shortly. So about this time, 3 years later, God calls him to go back to Ahab. It's time to go see the big bad king. And so as he comes back, this is 1 Kings 18:17. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals." So right off the bat, here's Elijah getting into trouble with Ahab again. Not only does he say, "No, you're the troubler, buddy," but then he brings his daddy into it. And so Ahab's probably like, "Don't talk about my daddy like that." And things get heated. Well, we start to see Elijah's humanity come out, just in the way that he argues with Ahab, right? I mean, it's kind of like a schoolyard argument. "No, not me, you and your daddy." That's kind of the nature of the argument. So like any good schoolyard kid, Elijah challenges Ahab and the prophets of Baal and Jezebel. He challenges them to a showdown up on Mount Carmel. He says, "All right, you guys bring a bull. We'll bring a bull. We're going to set up our altars up on this mountain. And we're going to call down fire. We'll see whose God shows up." So just to give you a little more background into what Israel's main malfunction was, and Elijah's going to call them out for it right here in 1 Kings 18:21. It says, "And Elijah came near to all the people and said, 'How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him.' And the people did not answer him a word." I think "the people did not answer him a word" in this is really key. Why wouldn't they answer him? Well, I think there's two reasons. And I think both of those reasons are incredibly relevant to us here in the United States of America in 2019. So in let me tell you guys about these two ways that I think that this verse is completely relevant to us today. The first is the idea of religious pluralism. Okay, this is the idea that everything is valid, right? Aren't all religions equally valid? Do you guys hear that in our culture today? Aren't they all just different paths up the same mountain? I hear that so many times. And it sounds so nice and so tolerant, doesn't it? But the reality is that this is just another dogmatic truth claim, right? I mean, because in order to say that, don't you have to be able to one that backs up and says, "Oh, I can see the whole mountain. Yeah, I can see the way all this goes, and it just all leads to the same place." And at the same time, it completely denigrates people of all other faiths. And so that's the first way. The second way that this is completely relevant is that we have our own modern Baals, don't we? We have our own gods. And those gods, if you really want to sum them up, their power and comfort and recognition, like pretty much everything I can imagine, money, sex, success, these are really just ways of getting power, comfort, and recognition. Right? I mean, think about all the folks we know that are just hustling out there in the big business world, trying to make a buck. And it's not ultimately the money that's the god. I mean, it is. But beyond that, what's the money doing for folks? For a lot of us, it's comfort, others' power, and others' recognition. So the people say, "All right, Elijah, this is good. Let's do this." So the showdown is on. And the prophets of Baal, they get the morning shift. So all morning long, they're up there and they're slashing themselves and they're dancing. And isn't that the nature of religion? I mean, so many religions, this is what it is. I mean, you're slashing yourself in some way. You know, you're dancing, you're performing. You're trying to earn your God's approval. And so at about noon, Elijah really rips into him in 1 Kings 18:27. It says, and at noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, "Cry aloud, for he's a God, right? Either he's musing, or he's relieving himself, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep, or he must be awakened." And you guys may have just perked up when you heard the relieved yourself part. And if you were thinking what I was thinking, you're right. That's exactly what Elijah was talking about. And I remember in my children's storybook Bible as a kid, they literally translated that part, perhaps he is on the toilet. So Elijah literally says this to these guys in front of everybody. So we realize that Elijah is a little bit like us. He likes bathroom humor, right? So there's a couple ladies back there saying, "I've never laughed at bathroom humor in my whole life." You know you did, but. So then it comes Elijah and the Lord's turn, right? In 1 Kings 18:36, "And at the time of the offering of oblation, Elijah the prophet came near, and he said, 'O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known that this day you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord. O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back.' And then the fire of the Lord fell, and it consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, 'The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God.'" And then one of the more gruesome details to this story, Elijah takes the prophets of Baal, 450 of them strong, down to the brook Kidron, and he slaughters them there. Then Elijah goes to Ahab with a little bit of a taunt. He says in 41, "Go up and eat and drink, for there is a sound of the rushing rain." So Ahab went up to eat and drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel, and he bowed himself down on the earth and put his face between his knees. And he prays. And he sends his servant boy, "Go check, go see if it's coming." He goes, he comes back, nothing. Prays again. He does this 7 times until finally the boy comes back and says, "There's a hand reaching out like of the cloud, almost like a cloud with a hand." And Elijah knows that it's on. So at this point, Elijah in 1846 says the hand of the Lord was on him, and he gathered up his garment and he ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. This is where Jezebel's at, right? This was like 17 miles away. And if you read this in the King James Version, it actually says that Elijah girded his loins. Have you guys ever heard this term, to gird your loins? I'd heard it, but I wasn't exactly sure how it goes. And guys, we don't wear tunics anymore, but maybe this could be helpful to some of you ladies if you ever get into like an action-packed situation. So what you do is you take your tunic, you throw it back between your legs, you whip it back around, and you tie it right here. And now you're like the guy with the little sword, and you're ready for some action. So this is just a weird thing for an old guy, right? I mean, because Elijah's pretty old at this point, and he runs 17 miles and beats Ahab back to Jezreel, which, I don't know, maybe he had a shortcut, or maybe the chariot was getting stuck in the mud or something. But, I mean, that's like 3/4 of a marathon right there. So he's got to be exhausted. He gets back to the place, and you got to think that he's riding high now that he's had this amazing fire come down from heaven, right? But he gets word from Jezebel in 19:2, and she says, "So may the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of those guys by this time tomorrow." And she's talking about all the prophets of Baal that he slaughtered. And in this shocking twist of Elijah's faith and fury, he turns his tail and he runs. It says in 19:4, he went himself a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And this is just a nutty prayer. Because if you know the rest of the story, and we're not going to quite get that far down the road today, but Elijah actually never dies. He's one of 2 humans in the whole story of the Bible who never die. He's actually caught up to heaven in a whirlwind. And here he is, completely at his wit's end, scared and asking God that he might die, which is completely irrational because he was just back in Jezreel and Jezebel would have killed him for free. So, Elijah, what are you doing begging that you might die up here? I thought you were running because you were afraid to die. And isn't that just the way that we get, though, sometimes when we're at the end of our ropes and we're completely stressed out? Have you ever heard someone that you love say ridiculous things when they're stressed out? You probably have. And this reminds me of the movie The Recruit. Anybody seen The Recruit? Yeah, Colin Farrell and the great theologian Al Pacino. So in this movie, there's a scene. So Colin Farrell is a CIA recruit, right? And he goes into the farm where he's basically getting trained / trying out. And this one night, him and some of his colleagues, they go out to a bar and they're hanging out. And as they're leaving the bar, they get abducted by these Russian guys that throw them in a van and take them and put them in these cages, which are pretty much shipping containers. And so he's separated from this girl that he has an interest in. And he's there for like a day. And they're beating him. And they're interrogating him. They're trying to get information about the farm and how the CIA runs. And he's not giving up anything. They're shocking him with a welding machine. And a day later, they bring in a pair of pants that are wet. And they throw them in his face. And they say she peed herself. And then he loses his mind and he just starts giving up Al Pacino. He starts giving up all the CIA recruiter guys. He's given up information on the farm. And as soon as he does, the back of the shipping container flies open and there's his classroom. It was all part of a test. And some of the ladies in the room are crying. The guys are holding their hands over their mouth. And he gets kicked out of the farm. Well, a couple days later, Pacino picks him up on the side of the street, gives him a gun, and starts reading off a list of things that he needs him to do. He's giving him a mission. And Colin Farrell's like, "What are you doing? I flunked out. I cracked." And Pacino says, "Kid, that's the point. Everybody cracks. You lasted longer than any recruit in the history of the program." And guys, I just feel like following Jesus can be that way. And Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 1:8-9, "For we do not want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia, for we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that it was time, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." Guys, sometimes Jesus calls us into crazy places, and he just keeps calling us deeper and deeper. And sometimes that's into your own brokenness. Sometimes it's into your mission, deeper into your mission, into generosity, into loving your neighbor. And just some of those ideas of mission, I mean, maybe that's God calling you to get involved in the Dream Center. Maybe it's adoption. Maybe it's a job change. Maybe it's going to India or Nicaragua. And sometimes these trials, they just don't stop until we crack. It's like we have to go there in order for the Lord to make us who we're meant to be. So here's Elijah in the wilderness in 19:5, and he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank, and he lay down again. And so this cake, guys, I got to wonder about that cake. I mean, this is like some magical angel food cake right here, you know? And I just want to know, what was it and what did it taste like? And I started thinking about Sam and Frodo from The Lord of the Rings. Was this like the lamb's bread, you know? Did it have lots of carbs in it? Was it sweet? I don't know, but it was probably funfetti, though. Funfetti cake, maybe? Anybody? Yeah, probably. All right, come back to me. I know you're all thinking about funfetti cake now. I shouldn't have said funfetti, but the cool thing about this, guys, is that we see the practicality and the practical nature and the spiritual nature coming together, right? I mean, you need food. And God knows that you need food. And sometimes that's the most important thing, right? And God says, all right, Elijah, I'm going to feed you. I'm going to let you sleep. And not only does he give him one cake, he gives him two cakes, and not just one sleep, but he gives him two sleeps. And the angel wakes him back up and he says, Elijah, all right, I need you to go to Mount Horeb. So off he goes. This is 19:9. There he came to a cave and he lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant and thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great strong wind tore the mountains and broke it to pieces. It broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And this is where we get that idea of a still small voice. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and he went out and he stood at the entrance of the cave, and behold, there came a voice to him and it said, what are you doing here, Elijah? I listened to this podcast recently that talked about the Bible as the first hyperlinked document. You guys probably read a lot of blogs, right? And so when we read blogs, we catch hyperlinks, right? You might read a blog that's got 20 hyperlinks and it's sending you backwards and forwards and all of these different crazy places. And the Bible's kind of like that, because the more you get to know it and the more you read it, you start to see how all these different pieces connect. And when you read one thing, it might take you back in time to another thing. And this is one of those things, because it kind of takes us back to this scene with Moses. And Mount Horeb, which is where Elijah's at right now, is actually Mount Sinai, which is the same place that Moses was so many years before. And Moses has this incredibly tender experience with God up there. So in Exodus 33, we read, and this is after Moses had asked God, like, I want to see you. I want to experience you, God. And God says, okay, I will make all my goodness pass before you and will proclaim my name before you, the Lord. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live. And the Lord said, behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock. And I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. And I want you guys to really focus on those eyes where he says, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Because now we're going to flash forward to Jesus a little bit. You guys probably have those children's storybook Bibles. Anybody that has a baby here at Oak City Church, we give them one of these children's storybook Bibles. And in the foreword to those Bibles, it says every story whispers his name. And this is how this story whispers his name to me. Because when you read in verse 22, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. We see that God doesn't tell Moses, like, oh, you get in the rock, and you cover yourself while I pass by. Because you see, Moses couldn't do that for himself. In the New Testament, we actually read in Mark 12:10, and Jesus talking about himself, he says, haven't you read this passage of scripture? The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. And that's a callback to Psalm 118. And so when I read this way back in Moses, and I think about Elijah on that same mountain, I think about Jesus saying, when he goes to the cross, look, I'm going to put you in the cleft of the rock because you can't do it yourself. There's no amount of slashing yourself like the prophets of Baal. There's no amount of dancing you can do. I'm going to put you in the cleft of the rock. Jesus is the rock. So we're going to jump back to Elijah here. And after he's had this incredibly tender moment with God, he's still kind of scared. He's still whiny. And he still wants to tell the Lord he's the only one left. And God says to him in 19:15, and go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Mehola, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. You know what he says to him? He says, Elijah, your room's not ready yet, man. Your work's not over. I need you to go anoint some people, Elijah. You got more work to do. And guys, your ups and downs may not be as dramatic as Elijah's. You know? You may not raise people from the dead when you're in your version of Zarephath, wherever that is. You know, you may not call down fire from heaven. But in some way, I mean, you're going to find yourself below that broom tree, guys. And in general, your story arc, I think it's heading up when we follow Jesus. But especially because we follow Jesus. And this is the whole point. Actually, before I say that, we're gonna be singing a song here in just a minute. It's called Seasons. It's by Hillsong. And I'm going to ask the band to go ahead and come on back up. And in this song, it's a really wordy song, guys, but it's just a beautiful illustration of that arc that we're on, those seasons of up and down. And so as we sing it, don't feel like you have to sing it because it's really wordy. You might just want to be quiet. You might just want to let the words speak to you. And we've got these stations set up around the room where you can go write, where you can pray, and just feel comfortable to do that. So guys, if you follow Jesus, you're going to reach the end of yourself to some degree. You're going to crack. You're going to find yourself under that broom tree like Elijah did. But be encouraged, because the Lord is gracious and he's tender and he will nurse you back to good. And just before you think you're ready, he will give you your next mission. Animo, church.